KPPP 88.1 FM, Fargo Moorhead. Welcome to Finding Me Out of the Closet.
I have something to tell you. I've been wanting to tell you this for a long time, but I was scared. Very scared about how you'd react, so. God, why is it so hard to say this? Oh yeah, I'm gay. Like, super gay. I guess I've always been more into girls than usual, but it's just still really weird for me to say that I'm, you know.
Gay, gay, gay! I am so gay!
No, I don't have a girlfriend. Can't even imagine having one. Makes me nervous to even think about kissing a girl.
I f***ed Tanya, I f***ed Lindsay, I f***ed Lindsay's ex-girlfriend, I f***ed Shirley's current girlfriend. Drama.
Mom and Dad can never know, okay?
My mom tried to set me up with her neighbor's daughter. My dad's still not talking to me, but whatever. This is who I am. He'll get over it eventually.
I'll never be one of those girls who turns into a stereotypical lesbian.
Did I get IPA on my favorite flannel? Hold my beanie.
I can't believe I'm gay.
I can't even imagine being straight.
You know what? I feel relieved. Like a weight's been lifted.
I mean, it took some time, but now my life is pretty great.
I'm happy I came out.
I just feel like I'm gay, you're welcome.
I want the world to know. I got to.
Good evening. This is Nemo Cicados with KPPP LP 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, and you've found Finding Me, the Valley's only queer radio program. I'm joined in the studio tonight with my favorite co-host and local rabble-rouser, Darcy Jada Corbett. How are you tonight, Darcy?
I am so tired. I feel like that's always my stock response when people ask me how I'm doing.
Well, you are a hardworking lady.
Very true, and I have been working really hard on tonight's show, and I've been looking forward to it for a couple weeks now. As a lot of people might know, next Tuesday, the 11th, is National Coming Out Day, and National Coming Out Day is not really a day when people should come out of the closet. I mean, you can obviously come out of the closet whenever you want.
Right.
But it's a day to celebrate the experience of coming out, to remember the experience of coming out, to cry about the experience of coming out, and sometimes to laugh about it, because sometimes it can be kind of a funny experience. I know in my own life, coming out has been one of the best decisions I've ever made, one of the hardest decisions I've ever made, but I wouldn't change any of it. And tonight I want to talk about that some, and I even would like to hear your story too.
On tonight's show, we will be talking about coming out and have some special guests from community sharing their coming out stories. But first, let's dance.
Very important to your emotional well-being. It affirms who you are as a person, and it liberates you from the fear and pain of hiding your identity from other people. We often talk about coming out in terms of it gets better. And honestly, when I came out, I can't say that things got better, but I can say that I got better because I was being me, and I was affirming me, and I was being true to who I've always been. But also, I think it's important that we note that coming out is a process which is different for every person. There isn't a roadmap that we can all follow. There isn't a correct way to come out. There isn't a correct way to transition. You should take the time to come out in your own way. And for me, that process wasn't really decided for me. I was outed, actually. I was outed twice. First as a quote-unquote gay man, because that's what I thought I was for a while, and then as a trans woman. So I never really had the opportunity to make that decision. And so I really, really want to stress that coming out should be your decision. You should do it when you're ready. No one should force you out. No one should pry and tell you that you need to be honest with people. It's about you making a decision to live your life affirming who you are in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing more affirming than coming out in your own way and knowing when you're ready. And I will talk more about my story in a minute, but I'd like to hear from you first, Nemo. What about your coming out? How was that?
Well, for me, it started with the online community, actually. I'll be perfectly honest in my coming out story. But what happened was during my senior year in high school, up to that point, I was pretty sure I was straight. And then my parents were doing some traveling over the summer. And during that time, I was in summer school. So I would be left alone at the house to, like, you know, mind myself, making sure that I got my homework done. And whenever it was over, I had nothing else to do other than feed myself and then chill out on the internet. And because I didn't really have all that many friends that could, like, come see me to hang out or anything without parent permission and all that, I decided to just kind of hang out on the internet. Questionable if I was, since I was a minor at that time. But, you know, sometimes you find interesting things. And I was on the artist community website like DeviantArt, which I no longer go to because it's become a toxic environment for me to have an account there. But that's where I started. And then that's when I started learning about people writing characters based on what they think about them, their perspectives on these characters. And so I started writing my ideas about a male character. And then I decided to get out of character in my writing of this character. And in the process, I had a lot of people of my same gender identity tell me how they really like the writing, and it became like a running joke at that time that I had a harem of people following me in this writing of this character, and I was so into it, I was just like, wow, I really like this attention. And then that's when I realized, wait a minute, I like this attention, whereas I'm not really into the attention of cisgendered men. And then, like, for the rest of that fall, I was thinking, this is a different experience than I've had in years. Because before that, I was mostly, like, zero interested in boys. But I was under the impression that I should be. And it bothered me a lot because I found, from an artist's perspective, a lot of people aesthetically pleasing, even if they were my same gender. And then I met someone who I really adored, and I would, like, do anything I could for them. And that's when I realized, wait a minute, I think, well, I'm not straight anymore. And so I told my sister in the sauna one day, Lizzie, I think I might be gay. And she's like, yeah, okay, and? And I was like, well, what do you mean, yeah, okay, and? It's like, well, whatever, I mean, and then that's that part of the story. And I also told my grandma, and she was like, well, of course I'd love you. And it's like, and the whole time I'm realizing, of course my family would accept me because my uncle Raul Gomez, an iconic gay Mexican man in this community, is also gay. So it should be expected that I would also be accepted by my family. But for some reason, I made a big deal out of it. But I only really explored my identity more when I was only out to my family mostly. But in the following spring semester in high school, I had finally gotten a role for a play. And I had never been in a play in high school. And it was for the Laramie Project. Some people in the theater area might understand what this theater play is about, which is basically about the voices of the community of Laramie, Wyoming, talking about their thoughts and memories of the murder that happened to a gay man, and it was a hate crime, and those thoughts on that. And I played a lesbian professor at that time. And during this process, I was doing every bit of research I could, both as an opportunity for me to learn about myself and the queer community and its history, Stonewall, the other parts of the LGBT movement, and trans women's part of it, queer people of color, the whole nine yards. So then we had a Facebook page for the play, and the students in that play started posting really homophobic posts in the play page, where we were both posting information about our roles as well as just other information needed, like scheduling, because it's North Dakota and blizzards happen a lot. And on the off chance that we have a rehearsal canceled, we gotta know about that. So then what happened is they were posting all these homophobic and transphobic things, and I was really uncomfortable with that. But because it's high school and you don't mess with the status quo, I didn't say anything. I only started saying something when one student decided to pose as a student angry about the play and notify the Westboro Baptist Church that they were putting the play here. And I thought to myself, I swear to God, I hope that they don't answer this email. And they didn't have a response, and I was glad for that. Then the student who had sent the email was disappointed that they had no response from WBC. So then I feel like I'm safe for that moment. But then a second student And I can't really remember the names of these students, but I can guarantee you can find videos of these, the news reports on YouTube. You can look up Fargo South High, Westboro Baptist Church. You can look up Sarah Siqueiros, which is spelled without an H, and Siqueiros, for those news reports about how they had posed as students and parents are angry about the play. And the second person posing as whoever got a response saying they would picket the play. And that's when I was like, okay, this is an emergency. So I went to my mother, who at the time was editor of the High Plains Reader, and she was told that she was not going to report on the story by John Strand and Raul Gomez, that they were not going to talk about what was happening at high school. Thankfully, and I shout out to you, Josh Boucher, thank you for writing that article about the shenanigans happening at Fargo South High. He wrote the story about how they were basically initiating this, or instigating, I can't really figure out the word right now, but causing the community to go against these crazy people, and their whole shtick is, you know, suing people for anyone who attacks them or whatever, because they're a family of lawyers, that's what they do. And I didn't want to have to deal with that violence at my school, in my community, especially when I myself am an actual queer kid at that time. So, because my mom wanted to protect me, she told me, listen, I know you want to do this, and it's important to tell the truth. But I just want you to know that this is probably not going to come out like a happy ending and you come out the hero. In fact, you might even get attacked. And because I'm autistic and I'm very black and white about issues, I don't F around with how I feel. I decided to tell the truth. I went to the news and I went on everywhere else to tell like what the truth was. The WBC didn't just hear about it because someone told them about it. And it was the students who told them about it. And Gwen Stark was putting ideas in the students' heads that it would be a great idea to invite the WBC so we could boost ticket sales for the community to come watch the play, which is disgusting, quite frankly. And also, yeah, it was disgusting. And of course, the school was already trying to cover up this because they were telling me, you know, kids will be kids. They didn't know better. And it's like, I'm not letting you get away with this. So we put the names out there. I had people on Facebook who I thought were my friends at the time asked me, why did you expose these people? I have gay friends and they thought this was okay, blah, blah, blah. And I instantly dumped those people. And throughout this process, it was really difficult because I was in high school. I'm still a child, really. And I had this, I'm probably going to say this wrong because I read a lot, but I don't ever know how to say words correctly. Naivete about...
Naivete.
Naivete. Yes, thank you. And I had this naivete about how my friends would stand by me, and maybe, and perhaps two people stood by me throughout that time, at least silently. I know they didn't, like, speak out against me, that's for sure. And I had teachers sending us official letters saying, like, you know, we don't support this lifestyle thing, and blah, blah, blah. It was disgusting. And then, because the school wouldn't really do anything, and the first night that we had the play, what happened was I was escorted by the assistant principal at that time. I can't remember her name, but I remember her name. It was Fremstad. And she was supposed to escort me so that the students wouldn't talk to me. And these students had the audacity to try to play nice with me, like there was nothing wrong and we had been friends all along, when this was not the case. There is a status quo within the theater community in Fargo-Moorhead, and a lot of these kids had connections all the way up to Trollwood. So, and I'm just going to be honest, like I said, I'm not afraid to say anything. And you can find all these news stories, like I said, all over the internet. And it's really hard for me to tell this story again because I've said it so many times, but you could probably hopefully find these stories. And maybe it's probably better that you read them too. Because I wrote a story in the High Plains Reader at one point. Whether it exists anymore, I don't know. Maybe I could find it and maybe I could link you to it on the show. End point though is that people got exposed, people got angry with me. I lost some friends, but I gained some new ones. I got a thank you letter from the community telling me that I was kind of a hero of sorts, even though I didn't really feel like it at the end of it all. And that's how I came out as bisexual at that time. And since then, the school system hasn't been kind to me about whatever I am, whether it's, you know, because I'm Mexican, whether it's because I'm trans, or however I identify, etc. And I think I'm just going to put it there, and maybe I'll just link to stories at the end of this. So,
yeah, that was definitely a really hard coming out experience. You know, not only were you having to navigate the politics of coming out in a community where we're largely not accepted, you also had to navigate the politics of these non-queer people really co-opting this really tragic story.
And
trying to victimize other people for their own personal gain. That's just terrible. And I really applaud your bravery and not only telling that with us tonight, but also your bravery in standing up and saying, look, this isn't right. This is why it's not right. And I don't really care about my own anonymity here. Like, it's not okay. And I sort of have a similar reason for sharing my story. I've had the opportunity to tell my story to thousands of people. I've told it multiple times here in the Fargo, well, not just in Fargo, in North Dakota and Minnesota. And it's hard. It's really hard to tell your story because you're opening yourself up to, it's hard to tell your story because you're opening yourself up to scrutiny. You're sharing a very deep and personal part of your life with people that you don't know, with people who you don't know will, how they'll react to you. They don't know. You don't know if they're going to ridicule you or make fun of you for what you're sharing. It's really hard. And it's really important as well. Because when you share your story, you inspire other people to do the same thing. To live a life that is open and affirming of their own identity. And I like I said earlier, I didn't come out. I was outed twice. And I like to say that my process, I still call it my coming out process because I still was orchestrating, you know, I was orchestrating the coming out process when I was outed. And my, I like to say that my coming out process was based on love and the quest for love. It was first based on the quest to find somebody else's love. And I had known for most of my life that I was different. I'd known that the way that I identified was different, drastically different than the way other people saw me. And I kind of repressed that and pushed it back because I didn't want to be hated. I didn't want to be victimized. I didn't want people to not like me. I wanted to fit in. And so I repressed my identity. I repressed the way that I felt about people. And it wasn't until I went to college that all that kind of fell apart. I remember very distinctly, I went to a very small Christian college in Alabama. And I, the first day, walked into the student orientation, and I was a very frightened and confused Southern boy, quote unquote. Didn't really know what gay was, didn't really know what trans was, or definitely didn't know what trans was. And I walked into this room and I saw this really beautiful man, and I just remember this instant connection with him, and it was unlike anything that I'd ever felt before. Like, I just felt drawn to him, and it seems really stupid, like Nora Ephron probably wrote it and then filmed it in the 90s, but it's what happened. I looked across the room, I saw this beautiful man, and I was like, I want to know who this person is. And then he disappeared, and I was like, oh, I'll never see him again. It was just a moment lost, you know, a misconnection, as they call it on the Craigslist. And don't ask how I know these things. And I later ran into him at another event and found out his name. And he was from Sweden, and I'll call him the Swedish boy.
Ooh.
And I fell in love with him, like head over heels in love with him. He was one of the most beautiful people I had ever known. And he has left a profound mark on my life. I would not be the person that I am today had I not had this connection with this person.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, he was the reason I decided to come out, because I loved this person so much that I could not conceive of a life that didn't have him as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. I started to tell people that I was close to, because I needed to know how my loved ones would react when I came out. And I needed to know, would I have people supporting me? And I told the wrong person, as one does.
Mm.
And she told my parents. And I remember the day, March 21st, 2011. I was sitting in my English class, and I got a text from my dad that said to clear my schedule. And I was like, oh boy, something's about to go down up in this mug.
Ugh.
So I went and hid in the coffee shop on campus where my friend worked. She let me hide in the back. And I called my sister, and she told me that my dad knew and that he was coming to town. I lived about, I was at school about an hour away from where my parents lived, and it was just this big, dramatic, unpleasant experience. Mm-hmm. And the result of it was that I didn't have anywhere to live. I didn't have any money. I didn't have a job. My parents had cut me off. Wow. The school I went to was going to kick me out, so I left.
Ugh.
And the Swedish boy told me he didn't love me.
So it all fell apart from
it
there.
It all fell apart, and all the things that I had really, that had been really important to me, that I had given up so much for, suddenly were gone. And I was in so much despair, and I tried to kill myself.
Wow.
Because I couldn't deal with the magnitude of what had happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the attempt was not successful, and I'm here. And I was able to, from there, move forward with some semblance of a life. But I still wasn't happy because I wasn't being me. I was being this gay man named David. That wasn't who I was. And so I continue to explore and to think about my identity, and I came to realize that I was trans. And so that was a really hard process for me because I knew that it meant that I was going to have to give up some things that I really cared about. I had rebuilt a relationship with my parents. I'd gotten into a good university. I was trying to rebuild my life. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this was going to cause everything to fall apart again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in the process of telling them, and it was in the evening. I was being honored at a banquet. I'd gotten a scholarship for being a good student. And it was one of a very select number of scholarships my department gave out every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd invited my parents, and I was living pretty openly as a woman at this point, but I hadn't told my parents yet. So I was going to have to, like, really drab it up so that I could be myself, but they could also be there. But obviously I wasn't going to drab it up all day because one doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I'm fabulous, and I have standards.
Right.
My reputation. So I brought clothes to change in the car. Well, I didn't see my mom had parked next to me, and she saw me changing.
Uh-oh.
So I outed myself the second time.
Oh, geez.
And I get a text from my dad again. All the bad stuff goes down with a text from my dad. It's no wonder that when he texts me now, I cringe a little bit because I'm scared of what's going to happen.
Right. It's a traumatic experience, right?
Right. And he texted me and he said, look, your mom saw you and we're not coming to your thing. And when you come home, we have a lot to talk about. And I knew what we had to talk about. I didn't want to talk about it. I wanted to get, you know, the heck out of Dodge. But I had to go and sit through a banquet where I heard people talk about how great I was with two empty spots on either side of me where my parents should be. And then hear people say how wonderful my parents were and how wonderful my family was.
Mm.
Because we were known in the town where the school was. And I had to be strong, and I had to say, yes, they are wonderful people. Yes, my family is wonderful. Yes, I am very smart. And I feel so happy to be here right now. And all the while knowing that I probably wasn't going to be able to go to school at this point. I wasn't going to be able to have the life that I had pictured for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And everything did fall apart. And as a result, I didn't have anywhere to live for a while. I didn't have any money. I had to start working three jobs to put myself through school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard.
Yeah.
Honestly, there are days when I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I don't know how you got here. You know, I graduated. I'm not about tooting my own horn, but I graduated with a 3.98 GPA.
Mm-hmm.
That while working three jobs, while dealing with the stress of being transgender, while dealing with the fallout from my parents, while still mourning the loss of the Swedish boy, which, yes, 5 years later, I still am.
Understandable.
Just, I somehow managed to survive, not only survive, but thrive. And mm-hmm. I think that's so incredible. And the reason I tell my story isn't so much because I particularly enjoy it, not mm-hmm. because I particularly want to, not because I particularly like to hear the sound of my own voice, though I have been accused of such, not particularly because I like being an object of self-aggrandizement. Like, I tell it because what I've done is incredibly remarkable.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did it. I literally don't. I don't know how I survived being homeless and some of the things that I had to do to make money. I don't know how I survived it. I literally don't. I look at myself and I'm like, how are you here? How are you still alive? You can't keep a story like that to yourself because there are people in our community, people in our state, people in our country that are in the same place and they're hopeless and they have nowhere to go. They don't know what to do. They have no one to turn to. They need someone to look to say, look, this person was in the same place as you and they overcame it. And that's why I share it. And that's why I think it's so important to share our stories. And yes, coming out for me was awful. Like, it literally changed my life mm-hmm. in so many terrible ways. But the one thing that it did, and I started this off by saying I like to think of my coming out process as a story about love. It started out with me trying to get loved by someone else, and I ended up at the end of it loving myself for mm-hmm. the first time in my life. And maybe that's how I got through it. Maybe it was just loving myself when nobody else would was what did it. And I just want other people to find that. And that's why I share my story with the world, and mm-hmm. why I'm very thankful that I came out and mm-hmm. that I have no regrets.
That's good. Because while the coming out process for me was painful, publicized, and really trying on me, I managed to graduate high school without falling apart too badly. My grades definitely did go down pretty quickly before they picked up a little bit, just enough to get out. Same thing with college. I hit several depressive episodes because of my race, because of my transitioning into my male identity, because, you know, once I realized I was trans, after watching a friend go through the transitioning process of, at least in social transition, I was starting to realize that I had been trans. And the funny thing about, like, because I love reading fantasy books, and I like reading literary foreshadowing, because I'm like, oh, this is going to happen next. It's, you know, too obvious. And that's how I feel like about my life, because I think back and I'm like, wait, that was a foreshadowing to me being queer. This was a foreshadowing for me being trans all along. I mean, it's like painfully obvious. It's like, how did I not see this evidence before? But of course, you know, my mom being my mom, she's always known. Every, you know, especially with autistic people, they do not really conform to the gender binary or the spectrum of what people know as gender or sexuality. And we just kind of like, whatever, I'm just going to do my own thing. I don't really care about the social norms of that. Whatever. And I managed to graduate and from college recently. And I'm happy for that. It took 5 years. I wish I had taken only the 4. It's mostly my fault because I should have probably studied more. But now I'm out. Better now than later. And yeah.
And you know, just listening to that and listening to myself, I think we're living proof that trans people really can do anything that they want. Mm-hmm. That we can be resilient to all the stuff that's thrown at us. And that by extension, other queer people can overcome all the terrible things that happen to them, and coming out as part of that process of really being able to take back control of your life. When we come back on Finding Me, we'll hear from our community members who would like to share their coming out stories. If you or a loved one is in the process of coming out, please take a moment to visit my website. There you will find information about coming out that will help you or your loved one find the support they need. Go to www.darcycorbett.org/help for more information. Now, let's feel the queer power of Barbara Streisand here on KPPPLP 88.1 FM, the only station in Fargo-Moorhead, pulsating with that irresistible queer vibe.
Welcome back to Finding Me on KPBP LP 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead. In our second half hour, we will be hearing from you as you share your coming out stories with us. Our first guest came out as a gay man as a college undergraduate. Let's hear his story of coming out in conservative Texas.
So I remember in elementary school, like on the playground, that I would hang out primarily more with the girls because I always knew that I was kind of different and that the boys really didn't want to play with me. But I always knew there was something different about me, but I never knew how to explain it or put words to it. And then it kind of progressed in middle school, like when the hormones start get to going. Mm-hmm. I just remember feeling shame around like being in the boys' locker room and somehow having these feelings that I didn't know what to do with. Because I grew up Southern Baptist in Dallas, in Texas. So I kept getting these messages that what I was feeling was wrong because I knew that homosexuality was wrong. So I had to really kind of deal with both of those ideas. So I kind of kept it to myself for a couple of years. And then I remember my senior year of high school, I went to a church camp because I went every year in high school. That I just couldn't handle anymore. So I told my youth pastor, that with this, the stipulation of that it would stay between me and him. And so he counseled me for a couple of months. And, I remember, I think I was 19. I was about to graduate high school. I had come home one day, and my youth pastor was sitting on my couch in my house with my parents. Mm. And so I knew... something was going to happen. So let me back up a little bit. I actually came out twice, and then I'm going to tell you the explanation. Mm-hmm. So the first time, in order to kind of get out of it, I guess you would say, is that I was bisexual, but damn well I knew that I wasn't.
basically.
So really, my youth pastor is the one that outed me.
No.
And then shortly after that, I attended Christian counseling or whatever that you want to just define that as. And he told me that it might have been due that, you know, that I came from a broken family, which I wasn't, that it was because of my learning disability, and that I just really needed to go back to church. And then shortly after that, my pastor and kind of my church was going to pay to send me to conversion therapy to Exodus International. So that lasted for a couple of months. And then I moved to Lubbock, Texas. And this was the time that I actually came out as gay. My parents had come to visit my brother and I in Lubbock. And at this point, my parents didn't know that I was really, really gay. But I remember I was at the gay bar in Lubbock one night. And then my mom was with my brother, and so my mom waited till she got back home to Dallas to call my brother and ask her where I was at, and my brother told her, and then my mom, being the sneaky woman she is, looked it up on the internet what kind of bar I was at, but then she called me the next day, and she was like, Colby, I know where you're at, and I was like, well, what do you mean? She goes, I know you were at the gay bar, and I was like, yeah, and so, and then she asked me, are you gay, and I said, yes, and she was like, well, you kind of know what the Bible says and what's going to happen, and I was like, yeah. And then she kind of just hung up the phone and we didn't speak for 2 weeks. Mm. Yeah. And then that was probably the first and last time that I kind of felt suicidal. But I remember my best friends came that night, but that's never happened again. What else do you guys want to know?
Are you glad that you came out or do you regret coming out?
Oh, I absolutely don't regret it. Yeah.
Basically.
It was completely different. Huh?
That's good.
Because, like, the person that I was before I came out, I was really, really shy, and I didn't want people to know that I was gay, even though I knew I had these different feelings, and everybody thought I was just stuck up, and so, but that really wasn't me, so kind of when I came out, I just, like, blossomed out of my shell. Oh, and I forgot to tell you guys, so in between me going to youth camp and my youth pastor, my pastor outing me, basically, I had spoken to this person, this is really weird, this story, so my youth pastor had told me that he knew another man that thought he was gay and that he went back to the church and that he had 7 kids and that he had beat homosexuality. And so we talked for a couple of months. And this guy prophesied saying that he had this dream one night about me that I would live the lifestyle, or whatever that means, and that I would come back to the church, and then I would preach about how bad the homosexual lifestyle is. And, yeah, so I kind of got the full gamut with the oppression, if you will. So,
what was he smoking?
And then, I guess the icing on top of the cake, I hope my youth pastor never hears this, but I guess it's at the end of it, when I kind of left the church, and my parents have left the church since then, because they're totally accepting and affirming, as Darcy can tell you, that my youth pastor said, Colby, when I was in high school, I had these feelings, but I knew what to do with them. So,
And thus violence creates violence, which creates violence.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Colby, you're so brave to tell your story, and I really appreciate it. And for those of you who don't know, Colby is like my bestest friend in the whole world. And it's hard for me to hear this story and not be a little bit frustrated. Just a smidge.
But I love you too, Darcy.
I love you too.
somebody else, so.
Well, I'm proud of you, and thank you for sharing your story. It was perfect.
You're welcome.
And I turned the mic off by accident. It was perfect. All right. Bye, Colby. I'll see you later. Telling your story can be so hard, but please know that doing so helps to inspire other people who came out to live open and affirming lives. We are so thankful for our listeners who are so brave to come on the air and share such personal and painful stories with us.
Absolutely. We have one more story to share.
Our second guest came out as a trans woman several years ago. Hear what she has to say about coming out in Minnesota.
So, my coming out story is kind of complicated in that it happened in multiple stages. The first time I came out, it was to primarily my ex-fiance, and to her and just a few very select other people. Well, unfortunately, she started to use that as leverage against me in what became an extremely abusive relationship, and that forced me back into the closet for about 5 years, where it became very difficult for me to trust anyone with my true self and my identity for the longest time. So when I did finally come out 5 years later, I came out slowly at first to a few close friends and to a few people I could trust when I was going back to school. But then one of my dear friends, who was also kind of slowly coming out, named Isabel, I found out through our online friends that she had committed suicide because her parents couldn't accept who she was. And the day I found that out, I decided that I wasn't going to keep hiding. I wasn't going to let myself become a statistic of being someone who died by depression because I couldn't be who I was going to be. And so almost 4 years ago now, I logged on to Facebook, as silly as it sounds, and I gave a huge mass email, a huge Facebook post to everyone saying, this is who I am, this is who I'm going to be, and if that is something that you cannot handle, then I am sorry that you will be deprived my company, because I can't hide any further. And that's just kind of been how I've tried to live my life for the past 4 years, is just trying to be unapologetically honest about who I am, because I owe that to myself, and I owe that to Isabel's memory, that we all deserve better than to disappear into obscurity because the rest of the world won't accept us. We owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to each other to be honest and open, and to say we're here and we're not afraid to be here. So yeah, that's my story.
Wow, that's beautiful. I'm a little moved right now, actually. Thank you so much, Katrina, for sharing your story. Do you have any other, do you have like any regrets about coming out at any point, or?
Well, it's still really difficult for some of my family. My older sister is extremely religious.
Yeah.
And so she and I have a very difficult relationship, which makes it difficult for my relationship with my niece and nephews. I don't know if there will ever be a day when they will be allowed to call me Aunt Katrina. To them, I will probably die as Uncle Joe, and that really hurts me.
Mm-hmm.
For my grandparents, they're as supportive as they can be, but it's difficult for them to wrap their heads around it because they're part of a different time and a different generation.
Mm-hmm.
Where, while, you know, transgender people certainly did exist,
mm-hmm.
it just wasn't something that was talked about.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, their biggest concern was, you know, fighting the Depression and then fighting, you know, the Axis powers, not so much fighting for equality.
Right, those were the issues of their time.
Right. And so it's different battles for different times, and they just don't get it. And so
that makes
because
sense.
because of that alienation,
mm-hmm.
That within my family, I have some regrets, and I certainly faced threats and microaggressions
in
the community from cisgendered men and women,
mm-hmm.
Here locally, and I've had to quit jobs
mm-hmm.
because of those issues, but I wouldn't say I regret that. I think that that's just the price of being me,
mm-hmm.
And being that the alternative is for me to not be here anymore. I think I'm willing to pay that price.
I think so too, and I'm glad that I've met you, the real you, Katrina.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So seriously, thank you very much for coming on the show. Hope to see you again.
Have a great night.
Mm-hmm. You too. Bye, Darcy. I am really glad we did this show. I've been so inspired by these brave people who have shared their stories with us.
You know, I'm just so overwhelmed by tonight, Nemo. I really am. When we started this journey together back in August, I honestly didn't know if anyone was going to listen to it, and I didn't know if the show would really even help anyone. You know, it's always a gamble when you start a new project, whether
mm-hmm.
or not it'll actually make a difference. But we've heard from so many people who find strength because of this program, and that makes me really happy. Because as the name suggests, my hope for this show is that it helps people to find the me who is trapped inside of them desperately wanting to be free.
That's true, and it's a hard process because you go through so many obstacles trying to figure out who you are, whether it's, you know, your cultural history, accommodations that you need if you're disabled, who you are in that area, and then, of course, the fact that gender and sexuality are fluid, you feel bad if you change different labels, and it bothers some people sometimes because, like, are you this or are you that? Well, right now I'm this. Maybe it could change. Who the heck knows? So, but it's none of your business how often I change, because I'm still, everyone continues to evolve, just kind of like how you're constantly growing.
It's very true. We're all changing every day, and that's part of that process of finding who we are, is being open to that and having people to walk alongside us and be with us. And I hope that this program is that for so many people in this area, that we can be people walking with you in your journey to find me.
Mm-hmm.
On our next show, we'll be talking about being queer at school. Be sure to tune in to hear special guest Andrea Jenkins and more. Tune in next week at 5 p.m. on Wednesday here on KPPP LP 88.1 FM.
Finding Me is a project of KPPP LP 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead.
KPPP LP is adding local color to your airwaves. We're broadcasting on Shoutcast, and you can find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM here in the Fargo-Moorhead region. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at @media_PPP, email cindy@kpppfm.com, or duke@kpppfm.com. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, The People's Press Project, and Mexican.
Donations to Fargo-Moorhead's newest low-power commercial-free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com. If I jump, will it echo from an infinite abyss? Does the light bring the thunder? Run away, you're still at risk. Be my sins, I
it's a shout.